Eddie, the Collegiate Senior. Chapter 9. Summer Break, Part 2. Summer would not be the same without the annual reunion at the county pool. This summer, since she has graduated from the university, Tessa has not been training as much. Neither has Eddie, who has been focusing more on work, getting the baby's room ready, and now that he is the mayor of his town, the town's business. It's anybody's guess who will win the annual rematch in the pool. The group arrives a few at a time. Angela Meadows, who now works at a television station, joins the group again this year. And Janice, from the track team, arrives with her boyfriend. Karen, the university's number one female sprinter, arrives with Amanda, Michelle, and Leslie, all of whom stay around during the summer break and train together. Not surprisingly, 8 matching June buggies are again found in the parking lot. Todd McCutcheon, being held in the county jail, is not likely to cause trouble at the reunion this year. Neither is Andrew Goldstein, who has jumped bail and hasn't been seen in months. Terry Haynes and Donna Harmon, now serving a prison sentence for assaulting Erica last summer, are out of the picture. And Chucky, who has been in and out of the sanitarium, has been readmitted once again. Having a quiet morning, the group hangs out at the tables, where various conversations ensue. At one table, Kathy, in her 8th month of pregnancy, is the center of attention. Today, Erica is the first to ask, "Is it a boy or a girl? Do you guys know?" Kathy replies, "It's a surprise. We don't know." Kathy suspects it's a boy since, many years ago, they attended a track meet in the future at the high school where Eddie Jr. was on the track team. But that's not to say that Eddie Jr. will be the first child in the Boganskaya family. At another table, Eddie tells the story that a water filter salesman came by the service station a week ago, selling tabletop water filters. Eddie tells the story, the salesman said his water filter will remove 99.99% of toxins from the water. So, I questioned him and asked, "So, your water filter filters out 99.99% of the toxins?" The salesman replied, "Yes. 99.99%. The water that comes out of this filter is 100% safe to drink." So, I told the salesman that I'll put the water from the toilet bowl through the filter, and if he drank the water, I would buy one filter. And I told him that I'll put the water that comes out of a radiator through the filter, and if he drinks it, I'll buy 3 water filters. The guy told me I was crazy. So, I told him, "Hey, if you can't stand behind your product, then don't put it in front of me." The guy left without a sale. Braden laughs, commenting, "Ain't no one gonna drink water from a toilet bowl no matter what kind of filter it goes through." Johnson mentions, "That guy should get a real job." Eddie then mentions, "The politician running for county commissioner wasn't any better. This guy was a real clown. He came by the station and told me that he was running for office, and his main goal was to lower my taxes. He wanted a donation. So, I told him that, if he gets elected, to come back before the next election, and I'll write him a check for the amount he lowered my taxes." Johnson comments, "You'll never see him again. Taxes never go down." Eddie, who is in the process of dissolving the township where he resides, replies, "Not without a hatchet and a machete." Bobby B. asks, "Didn't that guy know that you're the mayor of our town?" Eddie replies, "No. If the guy had half a brain, he would have known that." Mark comments, "Yeah, seriously. That election was all over the news." Eddie tells Mark and Bobby B, "If our town votes to dissolve the township, according to Ralph, our taxes will be cut in half. That's how you lower taxes. You get rid of 27 town employees who sit on their ass and do nothing all day long." Mark asks, "How come we don't invite Ralph to our parties?" Eddie replies, "I don't know. Maybe we should. It will get him out of his office." Johnson comments, "Seriously. Accountants work way too much. Tessa walks over to Eddie and asks, "So, when do you want to lose our race?" Eddie replies, "It sounds to me like you want lunch." Tessa tells Eddie, "I've been training. I'm beating you this year, buddy." Eddie laughs and replies, "I bet you haven't been in the pool since you graduated." Brayden reminds Eddie, "She was in the pool at your house during the graduation party. I didn't see her swimming no laps, though." Eddie stands up, telling everyone, "Okay, everyone. Let's get this over with. Tessa wants lunch." Kathy walks over to Sherry, who is now the senior lifeguard, telling her that Eddie and Tessa are ready for their annual race. This year, Karen decides to join the race. Eddie, Tessa, and Karen get warmed up, ready to fight it out for the title of this year's winner. Sherry blows her whistle, announcing that the pool will be closed for 10 minutes. The pool slowly clears out as the tribe moves to the pool's edge since everyone wants a good view of the race. Once the pool is cleared out, Sherry tells everyone to get ready. Eddie takes lane 3, Tessa takes lane 4, and Karen lane 5. Walking along the edge of the pool, Sherry tells everyone to step back 3 feet from the pool's edge. Sherry asks the swimmers if they are ready, who all indicate they are. Sherry walks to the side of the pool, ready to start the race. A crowd develops, with many spectators wondering what the big event is. Sherry announces, "Take your mark." With everyone in position, Sherry blows her whistle. Eddie, Tessa, and Karen dive in, all showing their strength off the blocks. Halfway through the first lap, Eddie is in the lead, but this is to be expected. Eddie's leg strength always affords him the lead right off the block. Eddie arrives at the wall first, suggesting to Tessa that she needs to start swimming. Kathy asks Hoffer, "Has Tessa been training a lot?" Hoffer replies, "Not much. We've been more focused on other things." During the second lap of the four-lap race, Kathy asks Hoffer, "Did you find a job yet?" Hoffer replies, "Yeah, I did. I got a job at the television station where Angela works. I was going to announce it a little later." At the end of the second lap, surprising everyone, the race appears to be a three-way tie. As Eddie completes his second flip turn, Kathy mentions, "It looks like Eddie gained a slight lead after the turn." During the third lap, Karen takes the lead. Kathy comments to those standing around, "Well, that was totally unexpected." Eddie, fully aware that he is not in the lead, steps up his pace a bit. Hoffer asks Kathy, "Has Eddie been training?" Kathy explains, "Not as much in the pool. Eddie has been mostly focusing on weight training. But in the last 2 weeks, he's been swimming a little more, especially since he knew this race was coming up." Hoffer replies, "Karen has obviously been training." After the third flip turn, Karen is unexpectedly in the lead. Early in the last lap, Eddie gains a little ground over Karen. Tessa, losing this match at the moment, gains slowly on Eddie. The spectators cheer as the end of the race draws near. No one, however, seems to know who is cheering for whom. The swimmers rapidly approach the wall and, at the finish, with the upset of the year, Karen touches first. Eddie touches the wall second, beating Tessa by barely a yard. Barbara announces to the crowd, "The winner this year is Karen." What a surprise! But, between Eddie and Tessa, Eddie won by barely a yard. Eddie gives Tessa a high five, moves into Tessa's lane, where he and Tessa give Karen a high five. Eddie tells Tessa, "You can have your pizza now." As the three swimmers get out of the pool, Tessa confesses, "I should have trained more. I haven't been in the pool much recently." Tessa, breaking the national record in the 100 and 200 meter freestyle last spring, has been taking a bit of a hiatus from swimming. Eddie replies, "Me either." Eddie turns to Karen and says, "But apparently someone has." Karen replies, "I'm found out. Yeah. I've been training a lot. A real lot." Eddie, Tessa, and Karen walk over, joining the others who are also ready for lunch. Over lunch, various conversations take place. Telling those sitting at his table, Bobby B. announces, "Me and Erica have set our wedding date." Mark asks, "When is that?" Bobby B. replies, "December 21st. Mark asks, "What made you guys pick that date?" Bobby B. replies, "December 21st is the winter solstice. Erica wanted to get married on an equinox or solstice. But the autumn equinox won't give us enough time, and the spring equinox is way too far away." Mark observes, "I guess you guys aren't having a beach wedding." Bobby B. replies, "I think we're going to go the more traditional route." Karen and Amber, still working at their summer job at the day camp, seem to be happy with their arrangement. Next year, however, they will both graduate from the university, and Mrs. Jensen, who runs the day camp, will have to find a replacement. Kathy asks Karen and Amanda, "How's Mrs. Jensen doing? Is she still a space cadet?" Karen replies, "Oh, yeah. But I think her daughter is a bigger space cadet than she is." Kathy laughs and replies, "I can only imagine." Amber tells Karen, "Tell her about the story when her daughter called from college." Kathy replies, "I got to hear this one." Karen explains, "Okay, so I only heard one half of this conversation, so you'll have to fill in the blanks. But it was kind of obvious what was happening. Mrs. Jensen's daughter, Penny, was in her first semester of college over the summer. So, I was sitting in her office, and her daughter calls. Mrs. Jensen said she had to take the call. It was obvious her daughter was having some sort of panic attack or something. Penny bought something using a credit card. So, the next month, the credit card company sent Penny a bill, and Penny can't understand why she has to pay for whatever it is she bought twice. Penny was telling her mom that she paid for it using the credit card and didn't understand why she is being billed by the credit card company a second time for what she already paid for." Kathy, among many others, laughs hysterically. Kathy exclaims, "You can't be serious." Karen replies, "I hate to say it, but I am." Karen goes on to explain, "I seriously had to leave the room. I told Mrs. Jensen, I'll be right back. So, I stood out in the hallway because I couldn't keep from laughing." Their conversation went on for like 10 minutes. Paula asks, "Why did she start college in the summer?" Karen replies, "The only thing we can figure out is that she had to take some remedial classes or is in some sort of Head Start program." Kathy laughs and blurts out, "Hopefully, they were accounting classes." Karen sighs and comments, "So, it's something every week with Penny." Kathy concludes, "It sounds like Penny will be running the day camp when Mrs. Jensen retires." As lunch comes to an end, Paula stands up and exclaims, "Now that we're all together, I have an announcement to make." Kathy and Erica suspect they know what Paula's announcement is about. From another table, Barbara yells back, "Out with it, girl." Finding out for sure just a few days ago, Paula announces, "We're having a baby. I'm pregnant." The group claps and cheers, causing others at the county pool to wonder what's going on at the tables near the deep end of the pool. Paula is inundated with questions from the women, while the guys move on to talk about other things. After lunch, Eddie and Bobby B. are discussing getting into the Volkswagen bus modification business. Not only upgrading the engine, they discuss other possible upgrades to the bus. Overhearing the conversation, Amber decided that she, too, wants a bus, asking Eddie, "What's the chance I can get you guys to make one for me?" Eddie replies, "We can do that." Mitchell asks Amber, "Why do you want a Volkswagen bus?" Amber replies, "Well, let's see. We're getting married soon, and we might have babies. It would be kind of hard getting babies in and out of the back seat of your Opel. And I'm graduating next year, and I'm going to need a way to get around." Mitchell, who is fast on the track but slow to move on life's other issues, is quickly silenced. Eddie tells Amber, "Pick out what you want, and we'll take care of the rest." The remainder of the afternoon is relatively quiet. Most people in the group are either sitting at the tables or in the pool cooling off. Kathy comes over and sits at the table with Braden. Braden tells Kathy, "It's kind of quiet this year. There ain't no Chucky or McCrutchen to mess up our party. But I've been keeping my eyes open." Braden, since he is a police officer, is always keeping his eyes open for trouble. This year, in contrast to the past few years, he finds none. Kathy replies, "Maybe we'll all finally get to have a normal life." Braden laughs and tells Kathy, "As a campus police officer, there ain't no such thing as a normal life." Kathy asks, "By the way, how is that old crumb doing?" Braden replies, "Shit. You don't want to hear about that. They really ought to transfer his ass to some other prison. He keeps getting his ass kicked in there. And he's always complaining that he's sick. That's because sick bay is the only place he doesn't get his ass kicked. So, he's complaining that he's sick all the time." Kathy replies, "Yeah. He's sick in the head. Maybe they should transfer him to the sanitarium, where he can be with the Chucky." Braden laughs and tells Kathy, "My father can't wait until Mr. Crumb is out of there. They'd be glad to get rid of his ass. From what I hear, Mr. Crumb is the biggest pain in the ass in the whole prison." Kathy replies, "That doesn't surprise me." As everyone gets ready to leave, Amber asks Kathy, "What's the chance I can come and check out your bus sometime soon?" Kathy replies, "That shouldn't be a problem. Just call me, and you can come by sometime." Mitchell, wanting to see what he is getting into, tells Kathy, "We'll do that. I want to see this too." Mitchell is keenly aware, now that Amber is 1 year away from graduating, that wedding plans are the next thing on Amber's list. The party quickly breaks up, only so everyone can get to the next party, which is at the pizzeria. On the way out to the parking lot, Mark tells Braden, "We got off easy today." Braden, not quite as confident, replies, "The day ain't over yet. I'm still keeping my eyes open." Everyone gets into their vehicles, glad to see that they are all in the same condition as a few hours ago. Everyone heads to the pizzeria, where they will plan their next get-together. Eddie gets the news late one Tuesday evening of the results of the special vote to dissolve the township. The residents of the town voted by an overwhelmingly large margin to dissolve the township and turn the essential services over to the county. The county will now cover all services, such as garbage collection, water, sewer, road maintenance, and all other services typically provided by a municipality. Now that the township has been dissolved, property taxes will be lowered by an average of 50%. And as soon as the changeover takes place, the town will no longer have any employees, including Eddie's job as mayor. Early the next day, Mark drives into the station to fill his gas tanks. Mark, Eddie, and Bobby B sit in the office for a few minutes, talking about what they are going to do with the money that they will be saving on their property taxes. The guys quickly come to a consensus to invest it in the stock market. Eddie then suggests another beach trip, this time wanting to invite the whole group. Now that Bobby B's Volkswagen bus is finished, Erica wants to take it to the beach. Mark inquires, "How's my bus coming along?" Eddie explains, "The engine is in, and it runs. We're working on the front end now." Mark asks, "Can I see it?" Eddie replies, "Yeah, bro. Let's go back and take a look." Mark looks over his bus with Eddie as Bobby B heads outside to attend to a customer who just drove in. As Eddie and Mark look over Mark's Volkswagen bus, in front of the station, Bobby B is on the receiving end of a verbal outblast from someone he does not even recognize. Not being able to get a word in, Bobby B stands and listens, trying to make sense out of the woman's complaint. Hearing the argument, Eddie walks outside with Mark. Mark asks, "Who is she?" Eddie replies, "I don't know. I've never seen her before. Mark comments, she definitely has a screw loose. Eddie jokingly replies, let me go back and get my air ratchet. We'll tighten it. Eddie walks up and asks Bobby B, is there a problem? Bobby B, now catching on to Eddie's sense of humor, replies, apparently so. But I haven't been able to figure out what her problem is. The woman yells at Bobby B, so you haven't even been listening to me. Bobby B replies, I'm trying, and is again interrupted by the woman who starts screaming. Eddie tells the woman, whoa. Hold on here. First, who are you? The woman replies, exclaming, I am Nancy O'Brien. And you are the guys that are responsible for my husband and son going to jail. They are having a terrible time in there. Immediately knowing this meeting is a total waste of time, Eddie asks Mrs. O'Brien, so, what do you want me to do about it? Mrs. O'Brien screams, I'm losing my house, and I can't afford to eat. I have a family to feed. And is that all you have to say? So, what do you want me to do about it? Eddie tells Mrs. O'Brien, there's nothing I can do about it, so why don't you just move on? Go home. Eddie then motions to Bobby B to go inside and call the police. As Bobby B walks inside, Mark asks Eddie, how can you lose a house? They are kind of big, and they don't move. Mrs. O'Brien continues to fly off the handle, yelling and screaming. Mark asks Eddie, is she for real? Mrs. O'Brien, catching wind of Mark's comment, yells out, yes. I'm for real. And you guys are not getting away with this. Eddie tells Mrs. O'Brien, why don't you just shut up and listen for a minute? Rather than shutting up, Mrs. O'Brien continues to yell and scream at Eddie and Mark. Eddie and Mark listen, occasionally looking at each other in amazement, as Mrs. O'Brien continues to carry on. Officer Wilson drives up, sitting in his car for several minutes listening to the one-sided argument. Hearing enough, Officer Wilson gets out of his car and walks up to Eddie. Eddie asks Officer Wilson, can you please get rid of her? She's out of control. Mrs. O'Brien yells at Eddie, oh no, you won't. You're not getting rid of me. I'm not done. Officer Wilson exclaims, Nancy O'Brien. Please control yourself. Mrs. O'Brien exclaims, I'm losing my house, and I can't feed my family. What do you want me to do? And these guys are responsible. Raising his voice, Officer Wilson replies, control yourself. Or I'll be arresting you for disorderly conduct. Hearing the word arrest, Mrs. O'Brien finally calms down, and Officer Wilson asks Eddie, what started all of this? Eddie replies, she just drove into the station and started yelling at Bobby B. Mrs. O'Brien starts yelling again, prompting Officer Wilson to sternly warn her, I'll get to you. Now, unless you want me to arrest you for disorderly conduct, I suggest you remain silent. Giving everyone's ears a rest, Mrs. O'Brien is silenced for the moment. Officer Wilson asks Eddie, and then what happened? Eddie replies, I came out to see what the problem is, then she started yelling at me. Officer Wilson asks Eddie, that's it? Eddie replies, yeah. I don't even know why she's here. Giving Mrs. O'Brien the ultimatum, Officer Wilson tells her, Nancy O'Brien, you have a choice. You can either drive away now, or I'm arresting you for disorderly conduct. The choice is yours. Mrs. O'Brien exclaims, fine. I'll leave. But none of you have heard the end of this. Eddie sarcastically comments to Mrs. O'Brien, yeah, whatever. Mrs. O'Brien drives off, committing at least 3 traffic violations before she is out of sight. Now that Mrs. O'Brien is gone, Officer Wilson tells Eddie, I advise you to get a restraining order against her. Let me tell you what is going on with her. Nancy O'Brien came into the precinct a few days ago, yelling, screaming, and flying off the handle, just like she did here. I wasn't there to see it, but I hear she made a big commotion. Apparently, to her, the law doesn't matter. She's angry that she doesn't have the money to bail her husband and son out of jail, so she's blaming the department, the judge, and apparently now you guys. Eddie informs Officer Wilson, wow. It sounds like she's after everyone. Officer Wilson replies, flying off the handle like that, she'll make a really good witness for us in court. Eddie asks, so, how's Richard doing? Officer Wilson replies, he's doing good. I think he likes his new position. But, unfortunately, he got caught in the middle of it when Nancy O'Brien came into the precinct. But, if he didn't run into it then, he would have run into it now. Eddie tells Officer Wilson, I have some really big news for Richard. So, tell him to stop by sometime this week. Officer Wilson replies, will do. I'll radio the precinct when I get back on the road and let him know. Officer Wilson gets back on patrol, very glad to see Mrs. O'Brien left on her own accord. Mark tells Eddie, I don't think you've seen the last of that crazy lady. Eddie replies, you're probably right about that. Mark tells Eddie, I'm glad I could stay around for the entertainment. Eddie mentions, at least, now I know that Mr. Brian and Jimmy aren't coming by any time soon. So, that's some good news. Mark replies, that guy deserves to be in jail. That really sucks, failing athletes just to make a little money on the side. Eddie comments, I wonder if he thinks it was all worth it now that he's in jail. Mark replies, yeah, seriously. Well, I'd better get over to the job site and get to work. Mark drives away, and Eddie gets back to work on Mark's Volkswagen bus. Later that afternoon, right before Eddie is about to close, Captain Richard Hayes drives into the service station, apparently wondering what news Eddie has to offer. Walking back to the service area, Captain Hayes yells out, "What's up?" Eddie replies, "What's up?" Richard replies, "Officer Wilson radioed the precinct, and I got the message that you have some important news. I've been inside all day long. So, I thought I'd take some time and get out of the office." Eddie asks, "Are you missing the streets already?" Richard replies, "I really like my new position as captain, but being inside most of the day is going to take some getting used to. So, when I heard you have some news, I jumped on it and drove right over." Richard then asks, "So, what's up?" Eddie replies, "The vote to dissolve the township was yesterday. The residents of the town voted to dissolve the township. So, the county will now be covering all the services." Richard replies, "I missed the news last night. We were out in the pool. But, that's really good to hear. There's no telling how far the corruption went in that organization." Eddie points out, "Frank Hamilton was in on it. You guys should keep an eye on him." Richard replies, "He'll be looking for a new job. We'll see where he lands." Eddie then informs Richard, there were two items that were voted on yesterday. The first was the dissolution of the town. The second item on the ballot was the disposal of the town's administration building. The second item passed as well. Richard asks, "What's this second item all about?" Eddie replies, "The second item allows me, as mayor, to transfer the town's administration building to any organization in the county government that I see fit. So, I'm giving the building and the grounds to you guys. That is, if you guys want it." Richard is silenced for a moment, then replies, "Wow. Are you serious? The department is really going to appreciate that. I don't know how to thank you. Wow. This is big news." Never seeing Richard so excited, Eddie replies, "It's not really me making the decision. The residents of the town voted on it. I think they'd rather see you guys get the building rather than the county water department." Richard smiles and tells Eddie, "Chief Gabriel is really going to like this one." Richard tells Eddie, "Thank you again. And you're not going to believe what I'm about to tell you." Eddie asks, "Oh yeah? What's that?" Richard explains, the first thing Chief Gabriel charged me with is to find a location for a new precinct in the northern part of the county. Up there, in the town that you guys reside in, is no man's land. It's on the fringes of every precinct. That would be the perfect location, but land in that area is very expensive. That administration building would be in the perfect location. Eddie asks Richard, do you want to go take a look at it? Richard smiles and replies, sure. I'd love to. And I have the time. Eddie closes the service station for the day and will meet Richard at the town's administration building. Arriving at the town's administration building, Captain Hayes and Eddie take a look at the grounds first. After a short conversation, Captain Hayes asks Eddie, how much land is this, anyway? Eddie replies, the building sits on 8 acres. 2 of the 8 acres is a green buffer hiding the building from the residential area. Officer Hayes replies, that's really a lot of land. Walking around, Captain Hayes sees more than adequate parking in the front of the building. In the rear of the building, another larger parking lot would be perfect for employees, police cars, and SWAT team vehicles. Eddie points out, there's also a nice picnic area. If you want to get outside, it's a perfect place to eat lunch. Captain Hayes replies, I see that. And there's a fence around the whole compound. Captain Hayes clearly notices the security features. Taking a look at the building itself, Captain Hayes mentions to Eddie, wow. This building is far bigger than our main precinct. As they walk inside, Eddie replies, it's 3.5 stories. In total, it's about 50,000 square feet. Captain Hayes asks, what in the world did these characters need 50,000 square feet for? Eddie replies, I have no idea, especially since the town will now be operating at half the cost, with 0 square feet. Eddie and Captain Hayes walk throughout the building, taking a look at the common areas, offices, and storage areas. During the tour, Eddie walks anywhere he wants to, but, after all, Eddie is the mayor. After looking at the first 3 floors, Eddie and Captain Hayes get into the elevator, ready to look at the 4th floor. The top floor, which is 1/2 the square footage as the other 3 floors, houses the mayor's office. A few other high-level officials occupy the floor, such as the comptroller, Mr. Hamilton, who has been fired by Eddie. The elevator opens, exposing a grandiose lobby giving the impression that someone who is very important occupies this area of the building. Opening the door to his office, Eddie tells Captain Hayes, "Here's my office. Maybe, someday it will be yours." And the office next door is identical to this one. Captain Hayes walks inside, seeing a 500-square-foot office with beautiful views. A private bathroom, complete with a shower, attests to the high property tax rates in the area. Pointing to the east through a wall of windows, Eddie tells Captain Hayes, "If you look out in that direction, you can see the university." Captain Hayes replies, "I see that. There's the stadium. And I can almost make out the time on the clock tower. If I had binoculars, I could see what is going on out on the track." Eddie points out, to the right of the clock tower, where all those big houses are, is Frat Row. Captain Hayes replies, that's where all the dope smoking and underage drinking goes on. Eddie asks, really? Captain Hayes replies, yeah. We know all about it. Eddie tells Captain Hayes, come take a look at this, as they walk outside onto the roof, where there is a beautifully furnished patio. Eddie informs Captain Hayes, by the way, all the furniture in the building is part of the deal. Eddie then points to the south, telling Captain Hayes, you can even see the high school from here. And to the right of the high school is Dr. Akinmola's church. Captain Hayes tells Eddie, this place is, well, I don't even know what to say. Eddie and Captain Hayes walk around the top floor, which is clearly an executive office suite. Captain Hayes asks Eddie, and the townspeople are okay with giving this away. Eddie replies, yeah. At the end of the day, They'd rather have the money back in their checkbook. And, with the number of break-ins in the area, I'm sure they'd be glad to have a police station in the town. Recalling a few of the break-ins, Captain Hayes laughs and comments, "I guess Frank Gloomer and that vile Otto character are out of a job." Eddie laughs and replies, "I fired both of them." Captain Hayes asks, "What?" "Those characters were still on the payroll." Eddie replies, "Yeah. And they were collecting a full paycheck while they were in the hospital and in jail." Captain Hayes shakes his head, commenting, "When does it ever end with these people?" Eddie replies, "Apparently never. Well, until now." Eddie and Captain Hayes head outside, where they sit and talk for a while. Eddie informs Captain Hayes, Ralph Miles and his father are working with the county to transfer all the residents' accounts to the county. They tell me it shouldn't take more than a month. After that, all I have to do is sign the paper, and the building is yours. Captain Hayes again tells Eddie, "I can't tell you how much the department appreciates this." Captain Hayes tells Eddie, "You know what? I'm going to take the rest of the afternoon off and join my kids in the pool. When Chief Gabriel comes in tomorrow, I'm going to tell him I found a place for the new precinct. He expected this project to take at least a year. And he was going to have to put a bond proposal through to pay for the place. That, in itself, would have taken a year." Eddie tells Captain Hayes, "Maybe he'll give you the rest of the week off." Eddie then suggests, "If you want to show it to Chief Gabriel, just let me know." Captain Hayes replies, "Trust me. After he hears about it, he's going to want to see it tomorrow." Eddie tells Captain Hayes, "I can show it to you guys at 3 o'clock. Captain Hayes replies, "The chief will be counting down the minutes all day. Go ahead and put it down on the calendar. We'll be there." Eddie and Captain Hayes both head to their homes, calling it a day. 2 weeks later, the day of the beach trip comes up on the calendar. Most everyone in the group who has a dune buggy drives it to the beach, including Eddie and Kathy. On the way to the beach, those who are driving a dune buggy use the two-way radio to talk among themselves, only because they can. By the time Eddie and Kathy get near the beach, there is a caravan of 4 dune buggies on the road. Arriving at the beach, Eddie tells Kathy, "It looks like we're not the first ones here today. Even though it's early in the morning, the beach is filling up quickly." Instead of getting the closest parking place to the water, Eddie and the rest of the caravan parks near the concession building. Kathy radios the other dune buggy drivers who are still on the road to let them know where the group has settled. Eddie and Kathy gather their stuff together and head to the water with the others in their group. Walking through the parking lot, Eddie comments, "Look who else is here." Mark asks, "Who's here?" Eddie replies, "Provost Layton's mother." Kathy suggests, "Maybe Provost Layton is here too." Tessa asks, "How do you know?" Pointing to the Austin van he rebuilt, Eddie replies, "That's Provost Layton's mother's van. I worked on it earlier in the summer." Braden comments, "That's one mean-looking van. That van looks like it means business. What is that?" Eddie replies, "It's an Austin K-30. It's built like a tank." As they walk out onto the sand, everyone looks for Provost Layton, but do not immediately see her. As they are laying out their towels, Braden sets up an umbrella for Wendy. Braden asks, "What do you guys usually do at the beach?" Quick to reply, Kathy tells Braden, "We all make fun of Paula." Paula, also quick to reply, tells Braden, "Don't listen to her. She's 8 months pregnant, and her hormones are off the chart." Kathy tells Braden, "Don't listen to Paula. She's only been out here for 10 minutes, and she's already getting heat stroke." Paula replies, "I'm not." Kathy tells Paula, "Yeah, you are. Mental confusion is a sign of heat stroke." Paula replies, "It's not heat stroke. Your hormones are off the chart, girl. You're not making any sense. And, at lunch, you're going to eat a whole pizza yourself." Kathy laughs and tells Brayden, "See? That's what we used to do at the beach. Make fun of each other." Brayden just laughs as he finishes setting up his and Wendy's stuff. And Paula realizes that Kathy got her going once again. Brayden announces, "I'm gonna go and check out the water." Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa join Brayden as they get into the water and ride the waves. Kathy and Paula lay in the sun alongside Wendy. Tessa, seeing Bobby B and Erica looking for the group, yells out to them. Bobby B, in turn, yells out to Johnson and Barbara, who are also looking for the group. Everyone settles in the same place, looking out for others in the group who have yet to arrive. From the water, pointing to an area of the beach in front of the sand dunes, Eddie tells the guys, "There's Provost Layton. She's walking in the sand with her mother toward the sand dunes." Brayden replies, "We should go say hello to her." Mark suggests, "Watch and see where their stuff is. The girls may want to say hi too." The guys ride a few waves, finding that Provost Layton's stuff is close to the water, not too far from where they landed. Eddie and the guys return to where they settled, finding out that nearly the whole group has arrived. Eddie tells Kathy, "Provost Layton is here with her mother," which is overheard by a few others. Kathy asks, "Where is she?" Eddie points to the location, replying, "In front of the sand dunes, a little farther down than where we are." Kathy quickly stands up, telling Eddie, "I'm going to go and say hi to her." Paula, who is very relaxed and doesn't want to move, tells Kathy, "Tell Provost Layton to stop by here and say hi." Walking up to Provost Layton, Kathy announces, "We weren't expecting to see you here today." Provost Layton replies, "Wow. Kathy, this is a big surprise. I'd like you to meet my husband, Mike." Provost Layton introduces her husband and Kathy, and reintroduces her mother to Kathy. Provost Layton wastes no time asking, "Who else is here?" Kathy replies, "Wow. Almost the whole group. About 24 of us." Provost Layton tells her husband and her mother, "I'll be right back. I'm going to say hi to the track team." Kathy and Provost Layton walk toward the group. On the way, Kathy looks toward the water, seeing an area in the sand that has been dug away. The tide has filled the dugout area with water, forming what appears to be a makeshift bathtub. Kathy recalls the time when Eddie was looking at Provost Layton's van and she and Provost Layton took a walk. On that walk, Provost Layton shared the story that she shared with Mr. Fraser about how her mom gave her a bath at the beach. Walking up with Kathy, Provost Layton is warmly greeted by the group. Wondering if the track team frequents the beach as much as the pizzeria, Provost Layton asks, "Do you guys come here often?" Answering for the group, Mark replies, "We used to come here a lot more often, but not so much in the last few years. But now that we've graduated, we've been hitting the beach more." Provost Layton confesses, "I've missed this place. We've been coming to the beach more, too, this year." In catching up since graduation, the question comes up, asked by Kathy, "So, what did you think of Mr. Fraser's commencement address?" Provost Layton sits in the sand and explains to the group, "To be honest, I kind of dreaded walking into work on Monday morning. I was confident that some administrators would voice their approval. But I also expected a few others to express their extreme disapproval. But honestly, I didn't care what anyone else thought. I had 4 hours to find a speaker, and I could not think of anyone more motivating to listen to than Mr. Fraser. But to answer your question, since I've been at the university, that was, by far, the best commencement address I've ever heard." Mark asks, "What are the other commencement addresses like?" Provost Layton replies, "To be honest, they are quite boring. Most commencement addresses are all the same recycled material, addressing topics like, you can make a difference in the world, find your passion, and world peace." Kathy laughs, asking Provost Layton, "Are you making fun of the valedictorian?" Provost Layton laughs, and replies, "The valedictorian's address this year was a watered-down version of the commencement address given 2 years ago." Amber, who has not yet graduated, asks, "Provost Layton, are you still going to coach track next year?" Provost Layton replies, "Well, how do I say this?" Barbara, in full character, replies, "Just spit it out, girl." Placing her hand over her mouth, Barbara quickly realizes whom she was speaking to. Provost Layton laughs and explains, "Well, first of all, next year, I will no longer be Provost Layton. I resigned a week ago." The group verbally expresses deep disappointment and sadness. Provost Layton then continues, "But, wait. I have taken a position in the exercise science department, where I will be a professor. I will be teaching a class in track and field along with Mr. Fraser. So, to answer the question, yes. I will be coaching track next year and, hopefully, for many years to come." The group cheers, really glad to hear that Provost Layton will be now more involved with track. Surprised to hear the news that Provost Layton resigned from her administrative position, Kathy asks, "How did all this come about?" Provost Layton explains, "During the graduation ceremony, when Mr. Fraser introduced me as Coach Layton and told the audience that I was largely responsible for the team's undefeated season this year, I realized for the first time in my life that I would rather be identified as a track coach rather than the provost of the university." Then, toward the end of his address, Mr. Fraser made mention that there is nothing worse than running someone else's race. Well, that was me. I was running someone else's race. Track and field is where my heart is. So, I took Mr. Fraser's advice and decided to start running my own race. The 24 track athletes applaud for Provost Layton, who is now even more convinced that she made the right decision to resign. Now curious, Amber asks, "So, Provost Layton, what's this about a track class you are going to teach?" Provost Layton smiles and replies, "We're not at the university right now. So, out here, at the beach, please feel free to call me Athena. But, to answer your question, Amber, there will be several new physical education classes brought to the curriculum next year. The first class is a class on track offered at the freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior level. The other class is a class on the field events, offered at the same four levels. All the classes will meet together. But, listen to this. The class will be also offered as an advanced placement class to high school students, who will receive college credit for taking the class. My and Mr. Fraser's goal is to get future track team members to train with the team before they enter the university. Then, when they enter the university, their skill levels will be top-notch. Mr. Fraser and I will be teaching the class together. Next year, if all goes well, we will look into expanding the program." Eddie comments, "I would have definitely signed up for that class." Mark reminds Eddie, "Yo, bro. You weren't even interested in going to college back then." The group laughs as Eddie replies, "Oh, yeah. That's right." Braden mentions, "Yeah, but we all would have taken that class just for fun." Johnson points out, "Mr. Crum would have found a way to keep us out of it." Braden replies, "Ain't that the truth?" Athena then tells Barbara and Johnson, "You'll be hearing more about this in a few weeks when school starts up again. I've already spoken with Dr. Zunday, and all the details have been worked out. The class will be offered midday, coinciding with the seniors' lunch, physical education, and study hall at the high school. That will leave the students ample time to leave the high school campus, take the class, eat lunch, and return for the remainder of their classes." Barbara asks, "Are you saying the class will be offered this fall?" Athena replies, "Yes, to those who want to take it. Dr. Zunday and Dr. Brooks have had the schedules reorganized for anyone who was on the track or cross-country team. When the students get back in a few weeks, they will be presented with the option of taking the class in lieu of a formal gym class at the high school." Athena then mentions, "This is a pilot program and is, at the current time, being only offered to Northside High students. Next year, it will likely be offered to other high schools in the area. And, as I mentioned earlier, we will likely be expanding the program. Once the conversation of track and field comes to an end, Paula tells Athena, "Why don't you guys come over here and join us?" Seeing the track team now as her friends, Athena is quick to reply, "I think we'll do that." Athena heads back to her place in the sand and returns with her husband and mother. Lunchtime arrives, and Eddie asks, "How many pizzas are we getting?" Counting the number of people, Paula replies, 15, not including Kathy. "She'll need two pizzas. She's eating for two." Kathy laughs and tells Paula, "Hey, now. You're eating for two now, too." Athena asks, "What's this?" "Paula, are you pregnant?" Paula replies, "Yeah. I'm eating for two. But the other one is about the size of a golf ball right now." Athena exclaims, "Congratulations, Paula." A few of the guys then go up to the concession stand to place the order. Kathy and Paula talk to the women about their due dates. The guys return with the pizza and drinks. Everyone digs in, including Athena and her family. Over lunch, Athena asks Eddie, "How much do I owe you for the pizza?" Eddie replies, "Nothing. It's my treat." Athena tells Eddie, "Please, let me pay you." Braden blurts out, "Eddie always buys. He's gotta spend all that money he makes in the stock market somewhere. There ain't no use in you arguing with him." Everyone enjoys the pizza, and Kathy is quick to point out to Paula, "See there? I only ate three slices, just like I usually eat." Paula replies, "Aha. And when everyone gets in the water, you'll finish off the rest of the pizza." Kathy replies, "I will not." Paula replies, "Yeah, you will, girl. And you know it." Kathy laughs and tells Paula, "We'll just see about that." Tempting Paula, Kathy takes another slice of pizza and places it on Paula's plate. Paula pretends to ignore Kathy's kind gesture, but eventually gives in and eats the slice. Eddie tells Athena, "They always get like this at the beach. If Kathy wasn't 8 months pregnant, they'd be chasing each other by now." Overhearing Eddie, Paula tells Athena, "No, we wouldn't." Kathy responds, "Yeah, we would. And I would win." Paula replies, "You'll never win. You're carrying an extra 10 pounds. Kathy replies, "So what? I'm still faster than you are." Paula points out, "I'd be all the way to the water, girl, before you could even stand up." The verbal ping-pong match goes on for a while, with Kathy and Paula providing the after-lunch entertainment. After a while, most in the group heads to the water. Athena, her husband, and mother join the group headed to the waves. Athena, putting two and two together, has figured out that Braden must be correct in his assessment that Eddie makes a lot of money in the stock market. On the way to the water, Athena asks Eddie, "I hope I'm not prying or intruding, but is the stock market how you and Kathy made the money to buy your house?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. I've been studying the stock market since I was a junior in high school." Eddie figures he might as well also tell Athena, "It's also how Bobby B., Mark, Braden, and a few other of the guys make money too. And that's how Angelo made enough money to move back to Greece and buy a service station there." Athena realizes that Eddie and Kathy must be well off. Athena makes the same observation of Mark, Bobby B., and a few others in the group. Now curious, Athena asks Eddie, "May I ask how do you determine what and when to buy or sell?" Eddie explains, "The key is the projected earnings and the earnings reports. If the projected earnings looks to be far better than average, we buy and wait for the report. When the report comes out, the stock goes up and we sell. On average, nothing is held for longer than 3 or 4 months." Eddie, of course, cannot tell Athena how he really picks stocks. He also cannot tell Athena about buying gold, traveling into the future or past to sell it, and making a profit. Knowing Athena would likely also want to get in on the deal, Eddie tells her, "If you want my list of what to buy and sell, and when to do it, I'd be glad to give it to you." Looking forward to a 50% pay cut in the near future by stepping down from her position of provost, Athena replies, "I'd really like to take a look at it, if it's not too much trouble." Eddie replies, "It's no problem at all." Everyone who gets the list stops by the service station to pick it up. It's only one page long. "Stop by early next week, and I'll give it to you." Athena tells Eddie, "Thank you very, very much. I really appreciate that." Mid-afternoon, a few members of the group begin to leave, having enough of the beach for today. The plan afterwards, for those who want to, is to meet at the pizzeria for dinner around 7 o'clock. Kathy, as Paula predicted, did reach for another slice of pizza, but discreetly ate it when Paula was in the water. And, seeing the dedication of the track athletes, Athena takes note that Amber, Karen, and a few other team members went on a training run in the sand. As the day at the beach comes to a close, everyone is convinced that they must do this more often.